All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now it's time to dive into what's going on in the metal sector with our good friend Dave Erfley. Dave is the founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. We're going to cover mostly precious metals, but then also touch on some of the other metals that are all also doing very well. And ask Dave what he's doing with his portfolio or if he sees any opportunities in the underlying equities. Dave, you know where we have to start. We have to start with silver. We're recording this just before the market close on Thursday. And so far, we're 15 days through the year, which trading day-wise, we're only about 11 days, I think, of trading days. Silver's up over 30% this month. It is no doubt absolutely a spiking move here, and that's after a very good December. And quite frankly, it was the tail end of November that silver was at $50 an ounce. And now it is seemingly going to get to $100 an ounce in literally no time. Dave, I do have to ask you then, how is this spike, in your eyes, different than the last two major price spikes that we've seen really over the last 100 years that unfortunately put a top in the silver market for decades afterwards?
Yeah, Corey, that's a great question. You know, if you're relatively new to the silver space and you're hearing about the silver price going bonkers and you want to get on the action, and then you bring up a chart, a long-term chart, and you look at a long-term chart, like a 50-year chart, and you see what silver did in 1980, it made this parabolic move like it's made right now. It's made a parabolic move, and then there was a crash, and there was a long, multi-decade bear market following that. And then you see the same thing happen in 2011, right? We had a spike to this around the same price level, around 50 bucks, and then it crashed and it ushered in another really long bear market. So you're a newbie and you're thinking, wow, I don't want to get into this thing until it crashes. Well, the big difference is in 1980, the Hunt brothers were attempting to corner the silver market. That was a synthetic move. And the CME, the government, you know, they came in and they basically changed the rules and put the kibosh on that and broke. And the Hunt brothers went broke and the silver market crashed. Well, 2011, the same type of thing happened. The CME raised its margins 5 times in 2 weeks, and that was a speculative bubble. So when you raise margin requirements 5 times in 2 weeks on a speculative bubble, that's going to crash the market, and it did. Well, this time, we've had the CME try to do this. They came in, and they raised margin requirements 3 times in the space of like 2 weeks. All it did was create some profit taking for a couple of weeks. And they did it while everybody was gone over the holidays, right over the Christmas holidays. So they couldn't really react to it. So the price naturally crashed. They couldn't pay off their margins. So it went down, but it's gone right up because this time it's a supply issue. It's a critical metal now. And silver back then was mostly a precious metal and not as much an industrial metal. Well, now it's more an industrial metal. And not only that, it's a critical industrial metal. So you've got a combination of it being a critical industrial metal. It's going into its 6th year of a supply deficit. So that's the reason why we keep seeing it go higher without much corrections. And also on top of that, you've got it breaking out of a 5-year cup and handle pattern, which is the most bullish chart pattern in technical analysis. And it's 45 years. So that 45 year resistance at 50 was finally broken through. That is huge. And we're seeing the result of that. Silver's tripled in a year now.
Well, Dave, in addition to those factors from 1980 and 2011 being different, we still have a lot of other factors that are even different this time. In addition to the critical minerals designation, we also see that there is a big difference in the physical market versus the paper market. We've seen backwardation where the spot price has been higher than the futures prices, but we've also seen a big difference between the last cycle and this cycle with the Shanghai Exchange. There wasn't a Shanghai Exchange back in 1980 that mattered, or even in 2011, but now the shift has gone from the west to the east, and there's a big arbitrage, and that's underpinning this move as well. So it's not just a U.S. story. This is a global story, and the story has shifted to China.
Right, exactly. Now the price is being set in China in the east, and it's no longer being set in the west because now the CME has pretty much no more control over the price. I mean, it's paper over here and it's more physical over there. And these supply issues are a very real thing. And, you know, and there's been rumors of these companies going directly to these to miners now to secure supply. So this is a real thing, and it continues. And so as this continues, the price continues to go higher.
So, Dave, if this is all about supply issues, then, and quite frankly, if the price does keep on spiking, is substitution going to become a risk here?
A substitution, a risk, and maybe just as far as in the West is concerned, you know, I mean, settling your futures contract in paper and no longer being able to take delivery because it's a critical metal now. The government come in and say, you know, we're going to settle in paper now. We can't give you physical delivery if you want it. So we've got those issues also. And with the silver price now in a parabola, I mean, the RSI on the monthly now is at 94, and it looks like it's gonna close the month for a sixth time above its upper month or monthly Bollinger Band. So I mean, we're going to have a correction, and I think 70 is now trying to become a floor. It looks to me like 70 is trying to become a floor here after what happened with the CME margin hikes. That's where it got down to, and it kind of settled down there for a few weeks, and then it started to go right back up again on the supply issues.
Well, and I don't think there's certain industries that can swap it out. So, for example, solar panels is one of the biggest industries that uses silver. You can't swap that out with aluminum or copper. There's engine parts that would be gigantic. It wouldn't fit in a car if it was swapped out. So there's some substitution that just cannot happen no matter what the price is. But what do you make of manufacturers that are also scrambling to get supply? That's been part of the story. We've seen some manufacturers go down and make offtake agreements with the mining stocks. As manufacturers need to have these components, how is that factoring into maybe how people are using the commitment of traders and hedging and those kind of elements?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. And also, I also forgot to mention that the U.S. government shutdown postponed that Section 232 investigation on critical minerals, and that was due to be released in October. So as a result, even though a spike in the exchange for physical premium in September encouraged a return of CME inventories to London, stocks held in the vaults now in the CME have remained elevated because there's ongoing tariff uncertainty. I mean, Trump came out today and said that he's not going to be putting tariffs on silver and copper, and silver and copper both experienced some quick profit taking, but it only lasted for a few hours. And when the overnight, and then when the COMEX opened this morning, silver shot right back up to 93, and I think copper is right back up to $6 a pound.
Yeah, copper continues to do well. But again, when we're seeing this sort of price spike, 30 plus percent in 11 trading days, that's not sustainable. That's not going to continue. And I know some of the silver bugs will disagree with me on that and just keep on upping their targets. But quite frankly, it will stop at some point going up at this rate. And then the correction will happen, which I'm sure will be pretty sharp. And percentage-wise, probably be a fair percentage. But then what do we do when we see that, Dave? Because again, history, and I realize this time is different, but history has shown that after price spikes, it can be very challenging for a metal or any sector to get back to these extreme levels. So what should we be expecting for, and what will you be doing after we get that spike and we get some sort of a correction, however big that correction might be?
Well, if you're asking about the physical metal, we do nothing. I mean, I continue to hold my physical metal. If you're speculating on the price via paper, via ETFs, then you know you want to be taking profits on the way up during a parabolic spike. But if you're talking about stocks, they're still massively undervalued. I mean, you take a look at the silver price. We talked about the silver price has tripled in the past year, in the past 12 months. So the silver price has tripled, but SIL and SL SILJ have also just tripled, and they historically provide leverage. You know, gold stocks, silver stocks, they've historically provide leverage to the gold and silver price. I mean, we saw the gold price go up 65% last year, but gold stocks provided the leverage. They went up 2.5 times, but silver stocks have not done that. They've gone up just as much as the silver price. I mean, you've had to be a good stock picker to really tap into the leverage. that silver stocks provide to the silver price. So, I mean, if you're asking me what I'm doing now, I've got some cash in my account after taking some profits, and I have some investment capital to deploy. And I recently recommended a early stage explorer, and it's still very cheap. They've just cashed up, and they're able to aggressively drill their high grade project. So, I mean, I'm happy that this is happening right now as far as the consolidation and the non-reaction to silver stocks, because myself and my subscribers can get into this stock on the cheap.
Well, Dave, I'm going to take the other side of that and say I'm not happy about it because even though, like to your point about the leverage, we're in this for the leverage and we're not seeing it. Even though silver's up 30% this year, the stocks are up half of that. If you look at silver stocks priced in silver, they're down at levels that we haven't seen since the pandemic crash in 2020 or since the 2015 low. And a lot of people got into these and they're already positioned. They're not waiting to buy the dip. They got positioned a while ago like they should have for the ride up. And the ride up has been exciting. But I think there's something happening that's really strange. And I'd love to get you to weigh in on this. Like people are excited because a lot of stocks went up in 2024 and 2025. Okay, fine. Some stocks went up 3x, 4x, 5x. Great. But that was on the move to 50. After the breakout in 50, from 50 to 90, these things have not leveraged it at all. And it's not just a little bit of a delta to make up to extend the cycle. This is a huge glaring disconnect in this cycle. And a lot of people are scratching their heads, wondering why we're not factoring in improved economics on developers, improved profit margins for producers. I mean, remember, Q3 was $39. We're just about to get Q4. Even if we have a correction down to 70, that's way higher than the last 2 quarters. Why are analysts and generalists and people in the sector not bidding these things up? Is it because they're all waiting for the crash?
Well, I hear you, Shad. I mean, but I think the answer to that is a combination of a few factors. Okay. Factor number one is the stock market continues to make all-time highs. So your generalist investor is still distracted by the stock market, and they haven't really discovered the precious metals equities yet. And also, you got to consider the fact of how tiny the silver space is. I mean, with only about 20 pure play silver miners globally, the silver equity space is basically too concentrated for diversified exposure. I mean, the relatively tiny silver equity complex is too small for major institutional allocators. So basically, when hedge funds and big money investors, they want to establish positions in silver stocks, they don't have many options. And the selling pressure gets concentrated to a handful of names, so price discovery breaks down. I think the combination of all these factors is the reason why we've yet to really experience a leverage yet, but it is coming. I mean, if you take a look at the sector as a whole in relation to the stock market and in relation to metals prices, bring up charts now, the silver price to the S&P 500, that's breaking out. Silver stocks to the S&P 500, that's starting to break out. Gold stocks to the S&P 500, that is starting to break out. And I'm starting to break out by saying these are breaking, they're breaking out of 12-year bases. As you mentioned at the top of the program, bigger the base, the higher in space. And also the TSX Venture, it's breaking above 1,000, which is a 12-year neckline. We get a monthly close above 1,000 in a couple of weeks. That is a major breakout of a 12-year base. And the target is just the 2011 high when gold was at 1800. Is 150% higher from where it is now.
So, Dave, one other thing that, look, I've been looking at, Chad brought this up when we did our quick take, was that SLV to silver ratio and how it is actually at low levels. And I made the comment, I got some heat for it, that I'm not too worried about that, to be honest with you. Yes, it's disappointed that here and now, early on in the year, these silver stocks aren't performing, but the top of a market isn't usually signified by the complete underperformance by stocks. When you go back in and look at what happens, it's usually the stocks get way too far ahead of themselves. Everyone gets too excited. Everyone chases the stocks higher, and then they essentially get stuck in that trade and they become long-term holders. A trade turns into a long-term position. To me, this is just leaving the door open for more investors to get into these stocks and still buy these stocks at higher levels than where they were in the last couple of years because the metals price, which is critical to these stocks, and which is something they don't control, is so much higher. And even if it does pull back to $70, even if it pulls back to $60, these stocks still have a value proposition there. Am I wrong in thinking that this is just an opportunity and could actually lead to, again, a more sustainable or even a longer bull market rather than the last innings here?
I could not have said that better, Corey. You're exactly right. I mean, the fact that the herd is yet to get in. I mean, we had the precious metals complex, the GDXJ, go up 169% last year. And as it's going higher, the volume is falling. This is telling you that generalists have still not discovered this sector yet. I mean, if you take a look at the underrepresentation, I mean, most portfolios have an average allocation of less than 1%. I mean, I've seen figures of implied gold allocation is still way down near 0.4% as far as total gold complex is concerned. I mean, we've got a long way to go. I mean, when you factor in how long the sector was in a bear market. I mean, the juniors were in a bear market from 2015, 2016, when the gold price went from 1,000 to 2,000. I mean, we had a couple of quick bull markets of like 5 months, but then went back down again. And a lot of these earlier stage companies, they did nothing. You know, drill results were not rewarded. They had to do everything they could to not dilute themselves out of existence. So if you're a good stock picker and you identify these companies that are de-risking the best projects and they were able to not dilute themselves out of existence and they're able to raise money now and they're only able to drill their projects, that's where the highest beta is right now, Corey. Sure, I still believe there's still multi-bagger potential in a lot of the stocks that I hold, the late-stage companies that have already gone up 3, 4, 5, 10 times. I still think there's a big upside in those. But the biggest upside is in the higher-risk early-stage companies that investors have still yet to discover. And now the financing window is wide open. They're able to raise enough money to finally aggressively drill their projects.
Well, Dave, I'm going to push back again here. I guess that's my job on this call. Last year, we saw the silver stocks and the gold stocks outpacing the metals at the beginning of the year while the general stock markets were going up. So you could argue generalists were just as distracted then, but that didn't stop the stocks from outperforming the metals. It was really when we hit that October snag and pulled back from October, the middle of it, into November, that we lost momentum. And then after that, as things took off, particularly in silver, but also in gold, the stocks really never started outpacing again. And that's why things have gone flat and they've been flat this year. Well, the stock market did great during that whole time. It didn't stop the stocks from going up. And you could even look at 2024. A lot of gold producers and silver producers went up while the NASDAQ and S&P were doing just fine. As far as generalist awareness, I've never seen so much media about silver or gold as the last couple of months. We got executive orders. We got critical minerals. We've got breaks to new high. We've got people covering the physical. We've got all these internet programs popping up on YouTube covering silver. You've got all this attention to the sector. I have generalist friends that couldn't spell silver a year ago that are now asking about it. If anything, they're less distracted than ever and more focused on the sector. And what about all the people already in the sector when they see the NPV of these developers going from a $1 billion value to a $3 or $4 billion value with gold prices and silver prices now? Why are the people in the sector not bidding up the developers? Why are they not bidding up the expectations of the margins and the revenues that we're going to see Q4, Q1? Why are people in the sector not bidding it up?
Well, in all fairness, they have been bid up. I mean, a lot of these companies gone up 3, 5, 10 times. So, I mean, some profit taking has got to occur, and it is occurring now. I mean, if you take a look at reasons, if you want to consider reasons why, where at end of the year last year, you didn't want to take some profit off the table because you'd have to pay your realized capital gains right away. You figured, hey, gold's going to continue to go up in the beginning of the year. So what, the beginning of the year, I'm going to wait and take some profits then. In the U.S., today is the deadline for having to pay estimated capital gains tax. People are selling stocks to pay taxes. And you also have to factor in maybe some portfolio rebalancing at the beginning of the year. You know, I'm not frustrated. I mean, this is happening to me too, Shad. I mean, I'm not frustrated. I'm making money. My subscribers are making money. And like I said, this is just an opportunity for us to get into other things that we might have missed that are either correcting or that have yet to be discovered by the market.
Yeah, I think it is too. I even started buying a lot more financings on that break above $50, and when I saw silver not immediately correct lower, and I'm still pretty happy with those positions, and a number of them are up fairly nicely too. Look, they're all different stories out here, and I also don't blame people for not trying to chase a spiking market when one like this that gets completely out of hand. I know some people did that with some of the rare earth stocks earlier, and that ended up burning them too. So I really do believe we just need some sort of a correction here and maybe just a little bit of slowdown in this momentum, because momentum sometimes when it's this strong does shy people away from entering those positions. But again, these stocks, I think they're still giving you an opportunity. Let's talk gold then, because gold has been, I think, much more sustainable run, and I actually really like the way the gold stocks have been reperforming at the tail end of last year and early this year. I've been noticing more leadership from the majors again, and that is just part of more of the bull market nature, is where I like it when the majors outperform, because that does usually mean bigger money is coming in, and quite frankly, that money will eventually filter down to the juniors. But in terms of gold and the gold equities, Dave, how are you seeing those right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at the beginning of the year. I mean, elevated economic and geopolitical uncertainty is playing directly into the precious metals complex. And with each passing week, we seem to add another level of uncertainty. And this is encouraging investors to continue seeking safe havens. And if you take a look at the gold chart, following increasingly shorter consolidation time periods, gold continues to post fresh all-time highs. I mean, gold futures hit a record high above 4,600 to begin the week. So, I mean, if you take a look at just the plethora of catalysts in the precious metal sector right now, especially gold, I mean, it's a perfect, the 2025 perfect storm for precious metals, February 5 hurricane in 2026. I mean, U.S. interest rates are set to fall further as these geopolitical tensions are now rising with the Monroe Doctrine. The traders are pricing in 2 to 3 Fed rate cuts, despite high inflation that the Fed has pretty much kicked to the curb. We don't care about a 2%. I mean, why they keep saying that they're concentrating on this fantasy 2% target is beyond me. It's never going to get there. I mean, everything that they're doing is creating more and more inflation. I mean, 30, 44, 30, 345 trillion of global sovereign debt now, escalating by the hour, as the world's most powerful central bank moves closer to losing its independence from government. At the beginning of the week, Trump came out and said he was going to use the Department of Justice to try to put Fed chairman in jail just to get interest rates lower. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, and you can't get any more bullish for the gold price.
Yeah, for sure, Dave. The gold price has been a thing of beauty technically, and there's a ton of fundamental factors from central bank buying, the global diversification, lots of other nations not wanting to be in the same spot that Venezuela or Russia have been in. So they're looking at getting out of US dollars and shoring up their gold reserves. The gold stocks, the producers, to Corey's point, have done really well, the seniors and even some of the mid tiers. But when you look at the development stage companies, we still have a similar issue where the value is going up so quickly on paper that the stocks have not tracked how much their value has gone up. Are you using a certain price assumption when you evaluate development stage companies, when you look at a PFS or a FS, a pre-feasibility study or a feasibility study? Are there any metrics that you use to try to determine if how much a stock still could catch up to its valuation?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at peer comparisons when I'm looking at a certain subsector in the market. Like right now, I'm trying to find earlier stage companies because, like I said earlier, I feel that's where the higher beta is right now down the food chain. I mean, it happens in the equities, right? I mean, the majors go first, the mid tiers, the royalty firms, they go first, and then the later stages, and then the earlier stage development plays. But now I'm looking at for the first time in years, drill plays or companies that are about to release a maiden resource. So I'm looking at peer comparisons, right? Valuations. And also, you look at the jurisdictions they're in. If you're looking at peer comparisons, okay, why is it cheaper? Why is it cheaper than this company? Is it worth the risk? And you have to look at share structures. You have to look at management. You have to look at were they good stewards of capital during this, this decade-long junior bear market that we were in. companies that they had to issue so many shares, and they've got all these warrants out that it's going to limit the upside on their share price. And also retail float. You don't want too big of a retail float, because then there's going to be, not as much upside in the stock, but you don't want too little of a retail float either. You want to have some retail investment in the stock. So there's all these things you have to factor in. But like I said, it's earlier stage companies now that are providing the highest beta, because they're the highest risk. So we're now down to that bottom of the junior totem pole, where the higher risk companies now are providing the best.
So Dave, to that point about the development stage companies, quite frankly, right now there's way more development stage companies because everybody is looking at some sort of production. But look, when you're looking, I guess, comparing their peers, they are being valued, I guess, fairly consistently, we could say. I'm sure there are standouts to the high side and the low side as well. But is there a problem that we have too many development companies? Or is it the fact that these companies, they just need to get their asset built to get that re-rate, and they're not going to get it beforehand? What is the problem with the development companies that it sounds like you're even skipping by them now and moving to the smaller companies?
Well, the reason why I'm skipping a development company, because I'm in plenty of them, and we have so many gains in the ones that we're, getting too big and we're trimming from them, and from with the capital that we're trimming off these stocks, that's the capital I'm using to get in these higher beta companies, because a lot of these later stage companies, their stock charts look like hockey sticks. And like I said earlier, although I believe there's still plenty of upside in these stocks, even though they've run quite a bit, the highest beta is in the higher risk companies. So I think this is where you need to look. But like I said, it's higher risk, but higher risk is higher reward. I mean, a lot of these companies are trading, below 200 million market cap, because while they're de-risking their projects, now they're de-risking projects in a bull market where their share price is going up with the sector. So they can dilute later at higher prices, and it's less dilution. And they don't have to offer warrants because their projects are so good. You have to make sure that their projects are good enough to not offer a warrant also. Put that caveat in there. So yeah, I mean, it's all good is in the space now. But like I said, that bigger beta is in the higher risk companies. But with higher risk comes higher reward.
Dave, why don't you think we're seeing more M&A than we are? And when we do see M&A, why aren't we seeing companies paying a bigger multiple when we have $4,600 gold and margins of between $2,000 and $2,500? Some companies even have $3,000 margins right now. Why are they only paying $50 to $100 an ounce in the ground?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think it all goes back to the previous bear market. I mean, the previous bear market was, I mean, they did so many things. They were terrible stewards of capital. They racked up enormous debt. They acquired projects that were uneconomic, and they acquired the projects with their paper. So they over-diluted. And they, like I said, they were terrible stewards of capital. Well, they've learned all those lessons now. Now they're paying dividends. They're paying down debt. They've got plenty of cash. They're making sure not to overpay for projects. I mean, they're all in the same boat. They're being very cautious. And that's a good thing, because eventually they're going to have to really start ramping up M&A, because they got to replace these ounces. And as far as I'm concerned, they could take their time, because my stocks now are going up on their own. My biggest worry on a lot of these stocks that I own that have already gone up so much is that they're going to get taken out too soon. Like the one we've talked about in the past, Probe, just that sale went through this week. I sold it on Monday. And four bagger out of it. I know so I'm not going to get a lot of sympathy from people that, oh, gee, too bad. You only made four times your money on it. But, we got into the stock a long time ago, back in 2020. And as the company, de-risked the project up to over 10 million ounces in a fantastic jurisdiction, we thought we were going to get a lot more than $58 an ounce. But hey, that's okay, because now the timing of the takeout was great, and it was a cash offer. It was the end of the year, so I could wait to sell the stock, because I knew I was going to get a certain amount for it. If I'd have sold it last year, I would have had to immediately pay the capital gains. I went ahead and waited until the beginning of this year, and I sold the stock at a nice gain, at a really nice four times gain, and I don't have to pay capital gains for another 14 months. So, you know, it's all good. I'm not really complaining. But like I said, you know, I mean, we were hoping to get a lot more for that, but that's okay because we're able to rotate that money now into some of these higher beta, higher risk companies.
Yeah, it's really been a theme for me too, is rotate some of these wins and not take the full win off the table, but take some of that win off the table and find these other opportunities and rotate it in. I buy a lot of private placements, and boy, oh boy, I did a whole lot of that last year. And I'm even working on that early this year as well. Dave, we've had some technical issues here, so let's get you out of here with one more question. Other metals, copper, that continues to run higher. I actually see a huge opportunity for copper, and I've been also impressed at how the majors have been doing very well. And I've noticed a lot more action in some of the juniors and some of the bit higher quality mid tiers. But there's also nickel, there's lithium's back on the table, uranium's running higher, tin's running higher. Everyone's talking about now all these other metals that are moving higher. Which ones, if any, have your attention?
Well, I'm still sticking with gold, silver, and copper, Corey. Like you said, I really like copper also. I think, you know, it's breaking out of a 4-year base here now, and it's breaking out of there. And, you know, I got my subscribers into a couple of silver plays already. One that I got us into at the end of July is already almost quadrupled. So, yeah, I really like the copper space here.
Okay, Dave, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for taking time with us on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Hope you enjoyed the commentary in the first and second half of the show. And I hope you also go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack account to catch up on all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. It was another pretty busy week for us. Still waiting for a lot of news to come out of these companies, but boy, oh boy, we got a lot of commentary on what was going on with silver. And look, there seems to be a few divided factions here of what they're hoping for and what they're expecting in the silver space. So everyone, go back, listen to those daily editorials and company updates, and be sure to tune in throughout next week because we have another pretty full week for you all covering market moves and companies. So, Dave, thank you again for your time. And everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.